C1T. Number 3A.
Yes, we have done that first tone of minus mind. And I've shown you how we can read the textbook intelligently the moment we don't read each sentence, but when we ask what are the subjects dealt with in a paragraph, from paragraph to paragraph. So before I go on, I want to take a few minutes on a side issue in regard to the structure, but as a subject that is important in order to tell you how to approach the textbook. You see, I think you should ask yourself, perhaps individually, quickly, a question and answer it to yourself, not to me. You have been reading the textbook over years and years, many perhaps over decades and decades, some perhaps since they were in Sunday school long ago. And you have been reading the textbook earnestly, devotedly. You really want to know what is in it. So there, you have put everything into it that you could put into it. And yet I think each one felt that they did not really understand the line of presentation of a subject in the textbook. That each one felt that if he reads a chapter like here, Teaching Christian Science, and has read it and studied, that he actually did not quite know what he has read. That he could not say, well, in this chapter it's quite clear, you know, Mrs. Eddy speaks about this and this overall tone, and then she breaks that overall tone down to seven big subjects that flow in the same vein as this overall tone, and afterwards she breaks it further down into seven subtones so that you have a clear, nice picture of a 7x7 matrix here being presented or layout presented, and it's all clear, and therefore you can shut really the textbook and say, I know now what is in it in the big line. I can reconstruct that within my own mind. I just can know now, oh yes, she speaks about mind as mind and what that is, about mind as spirit and what that is. So that actually we are able, through a closer study of a few days, you will be able actually to know what is in the textbook and no more read from sentence to sentence and just don't know where you are. Therefore, ask yourselves, before you had this layout, before we go today and tomorrow through that textbook, do you know what is in that chapter which you have read over and over and over and over in your life? You know, could you tell me right away, she starts with this problem, then she goes on to this, and this, and this, and this, and this, and this, and this. Your answer is no. Your answer after 2 days should be yes. And think what you have gained if you have devoted 10, 20, 30 years to the textbook and had to say afterwards, no, I don't know what really is in it. I only know single sentences, and those I can understand more or less. But what is it when you understand the whole thread in it, the whole structure in it, how one subject flows into the next subject, how one chapter flows into the other chapters? And this should be, I would say, the result of this week's work for you, that you feel there is a beautiful, clear, obvious way of understanding the textbook intelligently. Yes? Okay. So, if I achieve only that, that after that week you can say, yes, now I know how to read the textbook. Now I come back, go back at home, and now I can study those two chapters, and it's easy, I see what it's all about, I can keep within my mind more or less the big line that goes through each chapter. This is no more difficult. It stays with you. Then maybe I've achieved something. Because what I want to achieve is not that you get very exalted and uplifted sense of things during the week, and then you go home and then you fall right down from your clouds and are at the same point where you were before the week started. The benefit really should be what you benefit afterwards and not just during this week. So we like to have a nice week and an inspired week, but this should be so fundamental that you feel afterwards you stand on solid ground. You know where you are when you are alone with God, with that textbook, so that you are independent of me, independent of a teacher, independent of John Dolly, even independent afterwards of the textbook. Because being is that which we want to understand. And so the textbook gives us the system of it. It gives us the help of how to understand that being. But fundamentally, man is alone with his being and the reality of all things. All right, that was the side remark. And we go right back to mind as mind. Already now you can see that that text, which takes up mind as mind nearly a page and a half, which is already quite a bit of those 20 pages, you already now know what is in that text. You already know now that mind as mind shows us those three big questions that everybody asks. Should I have some kind of a medical knowledge to be a practitioner and in order to heal? No, you don't need to have it. Second question, what about if a patient that I'm treating says one nice day, look here, I am no more quite confident in Christian Science. I begin to have too much fear. I think I ought to see a doctor. The answer is, let him go and see the doctor and give up the case. Let him be subject to the wise leading of mind, but no more to what we tell him what he should do. We must see that he is not falling out of God's grace by going to a doctor. He is still, as Mrs. Eddy says, still under the guidance of mind. Still, God works all things together for good to those that love God. So don't feel that he falls out of grace, and don't give your patient that sense that he falls out of grace. He can only do so much as he can do. He can only trust so much as he has trusted, no more. We cannot force on somebody that he ought to have more trust, that he ought to understand more. Give instruction to a wise man, and then he will become wiser. But you cannot impose a knowledge of God on anybody. So let him be led in the wise leadings of mind. And then you know that the third question she takes up is, and if somebody had full trust in Christian Science and did his best, and the practitioner couldn't help him either, all this happens, what then? Is that case lost? What shall we do? Her answer is what we should do. That we now say, all right, whatever that case is, I have to treat now something else. I have to go to mind and ask for guidance. And say, not the patient knows in his fear what to do, nor the practitioner now knows what he should do. He has done his best what he could do. He cannot do more than his best. What is now the next step? And then go to the divine mind and say, but in the divine mind there is still guidance. And the divine mind will show. And so work on that point of mind as mind, that mind actually knows a way out, that mind knows exactly which way to take, it knows exactly which step to take. The only thing then is to be open to the guidings of the divine mind and not to be narrow and say it must come through eternal means and not through temporal means. She leaves open both, that it can be through temporal and eternal means. God is much bigger than to be restricted just to one channel of working. All that love God, that's why she brings in that quotation, all things work together for good to them that love God. So let's have all things working together. The material, the mental, the psychic, the spiritual, the eternal, the temporal, let them work all together, because God has the ability to translate itself not only to one level, to the spiritual level, it also translates itself down to the human level, right down to the material level, right down to the level of error. So that there is nothing outside of God's universe that could not be used, that could not serve the divine idea. The ravens did serve Elijah. They were not bad enough to serve him, and they fed him. And so we too should see there is a whole universe that really is there to help the divine idea. And it's only a question of opening up our thought wide enough and have not preconceived notions how and through which channel a case should work out. Can you see here also the ethics of Christian Science? Namely, that we really show that we should not impose our sense of what is right. Ethics has all to do with what is right and how to do right and how to do good. Not to impose on the patient our sense of right, but support his sense of right. That's what we have to do at this point. So we come to the next tone of mind as spirit. So we will see something about that true motive viewed from the qualities of spirit. And our epitome here is that this demands to be charitable to opponents and parting with them without strife. Now, those who know the seventh synonymous term detect here very easily that this has to do with spirit, because spirit is the only, therefore it deals with opponents, with the question of duality. And spirit is that which makes a line of demarcation, separating the right from the wrong. Here, that line of demarcation is indicated by parting with them. That's the line of demarcation and separation. Spirit always separates. But without strife, again you have the tone of spirit here, strife, it's the opposite of the onlyness of spirit, that spirit always leads to warfare, but not as a duality, not by fighting, but in a other way, namely by parting, without strife. Just as Abraham has said to Lot, if you go to the right, I go to the left, and if you choose to go to the right, I go to the left. We separate that spirit, the purification of spirit. Now, what Mrs. Eddy introduces here is actually to be now charitable to opponents, and not to consider them as a terrific enemy that we have to face and against which we have to battle. The side note here already is charity to those opposed. You can hear the tone of spirit right away. And what is her attitude towards opponents? She says, Well, to be charitable and kind to opponents, because there are always people with differing forms of religion, differing forms of adherence to healing, to healing medicine, that we really should hold no enmity against those who hold different or differing opinions. Can you see again that true tolerance in motive that says, don't argue always with differing opinions. Don't try always to correct them and try to convince them of what you do. If they don't want to listen, leave them alone. They have a right to have a different opinion. They have a right to believe in something else than you do. Don't fight with them. Don't argue with them. Always to judge righteous judgment. Don't judge them, she says. See? Don't consider them and condemn them rashly. Can you see that wonderful charitable attitude towards something that is opposed really to our sense of what is the truth of being? Therefore, she says, as an ethics, part from these opponents. Don't try to convince them. Don't be a missionary. And what do you say if you want to convince the other ones? Proselyte. Don't proselyte. You see, if we can't convince them, then leave him. Oh no, I should put it the other way. If God cannot convince them, why should we be able to convince them? If we see that each one is under the leadings of mind, then let them be led with the wise leadings of mind and not interfere with our narrow concepts. So, apart from these opponents, if they turn a deaf ear on the teaching of Christian Science, part with them. Let there be no strife. You know? Just as in the Bible it was said, I pray thee between me and thee, for we are brethren. Let there be no strife. They have the right to be led according to the divine mind, the way they are ready to be led. Everybody is at a different stage of development. And we cannot force the development. Just as we cannot force the development of a seed, of a flower. The moment we interfere with the development of a plant, we kill it. It withers. And so we should have the same attitude towards opponents or people who have other opinions. They don't not even need to be opinions. They have just another opinion. They have another concept of religion and of being and of healing. Leave them alone. Don't fight them. Part with those opponents. Because then she ends and says, you know, we always have to consider from a spiritual standpoint that some consider themselves to be immortals, others consider themselves to be mortals, and these are completely different attitudes. Don't fight over that. All what is needed is that you know what you are. That's the tone of spirit. Can you listen and hear the tone of spirit here very easily? Huh? That clean separation process without fighting. The moment we fight, we make evil real. And that's not Christian Science. Christian Science makes nothing of evil. But it also needs that charitable attitude, that wise attitude, to say, let every plant develop according to its own laws, to its own leadings. And so let every one who believes whatever he believes develop the way he will develop. It's not our responsibility to talk him into something he doesn't want to hear. There is more power in going to the divine mind and see that the divine mind can lead everyone and has enough wisdom to lead it that way and within that plan that mind knows, than that we interfere with our narrow concept of how things should go. So that's the tone of spirit, of subtone of spirit. What is the motive? Mind. The motive at the point of spirit is to have that motive and that attitude, that charitable attitude, which leaves an opponent alone. So we come to the next tone of soul. Mind as soul. Again, we would have to see here what is the motive at the point of soul. And we say, this demands, that's my epitome, to conform to God's rules. And here it is that he begins to show that we should have strict adherence to the rules of soul. The side heading here, marginal heading, is conforming to explicit rules, soul. And this is interesting, you know. I make again a little side remark, which is necessary for text interpretation, for understanding the text. I do make these side remarks as they come along and they are illustrated. You see, we have to also to see that these subtones have a logical sequence. They are not just seven aspects that doesn't seem to have any interrelationship with each other. These seven subtones from the seven angles of the seven synonymous term always give you a logical sequence. A logical sequence. They are not just seven different aspects. There is a relationship in between them, so that the subtone of mind flows to the subtone of spirit, and the subtone of spirit flows to the subtone of soul, and soul flows to the subtone of principle, and so on. Here you see it very nicely. We started with the subtone of mind, you know, which showed us to be tolerant. All right, tolerant. So what shall I do with the opponent? Spirit says, leave him alone. Don't fight with him. If you don't fight, then what then is your job, positively? Positively, your job is that you look after yourself first. That our job is first that we do what is right, before we tell the other one what he should do right. So at the tone of soul, suddenly it is, if she would say, now, don't always bother about the other fellow. Bother first about yourself. Do your job right. See that you clean first your house before you tell the other one how he should clean his house. And that's the tone of soul, naturally, of identifying oneself first properly. And this is to conform to God's rules. Here we have for the first time that great statement that the ethics of Christian Science healing is what? That all is mind, and that the scientist must conform to God's requirements. So it really, Mrs. Eddy addresses herself to the individual reader and says, what should you do? And so he says, first, therefore, by obeying the rules of the divine principle, you first fit yourself to be untouched by animal magnetism, so that animal magnetism can no more touch you. And it is for the first time here, and afterwards we'll see it under the main tone of soul that she deals with the question of animal magnetism. Therefore, to fit his students to defend themselves against sin, to guard against the attacks of the would-be mental assassins. So here we have the great proposition that how can we defend ourselves against animal magnetism? The very positive answer she gives, conform to the rules of metaphysics, and then you are untouchable. You don't have then to fight against animal magnetism. If you use the rules of soul, then animal magnetism can no more touch you. So equip your student and yourself with that attitude of using the rules of soul, so that and unfold the latent energies and capacities for good in your pupil. Can you hear the capacity of soul that says, first, let mobilize everything what is in the student, in the reader. That's important. Not so much to tell other people what they should do. First, do it yourself and try that you are in line with that divine principle, then you can no more be touched by animal magnetism. So teach them the great possibilities of man equipped with divine science. Can you see again the capacity of soul? The terrific capacity of soul, man being equipped with divine science, so as to teach the meekness and might of life hid with Christ in God. Again, hid with Christ in God. Terrific sense of being in conformity with principle. In order to be hid with Christ in God, in order to really use the whole capacity that is within us, therefore we must have a completely unlimited sense. Soul is never in limits. Soul is never in something. And here she brings it up and shows that unlimited capacity. She says, teach the dangerous possibility of dwarfing the spiritual understanding and demonstration of truth by sin. And that great rule she gives here, namely, not to weigh. Let's read the whole paragraph. Says, you render the divine law void. You render the divine law void when you weigh the human in the scale of the divine. That's always something that is sinful, to weigh the human in the scale of the divine. Never measure the true idea man with his human, through his human form, through his human attitude. Weigh everyone always in the scale of the divine, or we lose the keynote of harmony. So that we feel here a terrific sense of soul that is sinless, but that is only sinless if we have the whole capacity of soul, and therefore shows here that wonderful sense that if we conform to the divine principle of metaphysics, that this gives us an unlimited sense of things, and therefore it protects us from every attack of animal magnetism.